Hello and welcome to another episode of Gemstone Mine. I'm John.
I'm Alex.
And I'm Jake.
And we got another great episode planned for you today. We're doing another Dex We Play, which apparently this was our most popular episode from our first 10 episodes when we did our Dex We Play with Galta. So we decided to get back to it with another interesting deck, and we're going to be talking about God Eternal Oketra today. Our goal with these Dex We Play series is to look to hone our decks with suggestions from the rest of the team and try to explain how the deck works so we can actually get good, helpful suggestions. Before we get to that, though, there's some news going on in Magic. Well, we are kind of in the holiday lull right now with everything. Usually this, you know, November, December timeframe tends to not be the biggest news time for Magic. We did get some a new secret lair drop this past week. Any of you guys take a look at any of those cards? From the Secret Lair Anniversary? Was that they called it?
I looked at... So, like, all the lands ones are super appealing. Like, when they did the snow-covered lands, those were really neat. The problem is, like, with, you know, EDH decks, you normally have more than one specific basic land. So if you were looking to have... Unless you're Jake, in which case you have no basic lands, everything is a brass tower, you know, brass tower and hurts you. Even if it's mono-colored.
Well, if you're running a Tainted Pact mana base, yeah, your lands can't have the same English name.
Sorry, go ahead.
So, for myself, the issue that I run into, and I imagine a lot of people run into, is just needing more copies of them. So, paying $40-something, $50-something for a set of lands that you only get one of is rough. So, the Bob Ross ones are great, but instead of having one set that has 10 lands in it, they should just have five sets with 10 lands of a specific kind. That way you have a bit more mix and match. Like, I would spend the money to buy, like, you know, 10 foil Bob Ross islands and forests, and not so much swamps, because who plays black? Jake.
Yes.
Speaking of black, they also had a Seb McKinnon, like a signature artist series. That was the one that had Damnation in it. It had a really sweet full art swamp in it.
Oh my god, that swamp is beautiful. I have not seen this yet.
This is our live reaction. Jake reacts to swamp. So I ordered the Seb McKinnon one, and I also pre-ordered the Shred Hard one, the one with the death metal themed cards. Yeah. That, so, they just look incredible.
They do. The only thing that put me off about that one, and they're all good with the exception of if Dreadbore and Thraxamundar were cards other than Dreadbore and Thraxamundar, I would have been more into it, because Decimate is a favorite of mine. Assassin's Trophy is Assassin's Trophy. I mean, it doesn't need really much more to be said to it. Anguish on Making is a solid card, but the other two, Dreadbore and Thraxamundar cards, I really don't personally play that often. So spending the money for 3 out of 5 is... not where I'd want to be. That being said, I'll more than likely try and pick up a copy of Anguish on Making an Assassin's Trophy because they look amazing.
They are straight metal.
They are. And then, I mean, we're talking about Secret Lair. That's the Box of Rocks was, like, I want to say
the
a little
word
bit
you're looking for is disappointing.
It's disappointing, yeah. Like, Arcane Signet was a fantastic one to include. I mean, it's been a chase card since Brawl was first announced, and the card was $40-something. And then,
you're referring to the Brawl decks that came out alongside of Throne of Eldraine, of course.
I think those are the only Brawl decks they've released, aren't they?
Yep.
Yeah, the only Brawl decks that Wizards themselves supported. And then they really had a chance to, you know, put some more interesting, you know, cards out there for the players. And, you know, we ended up getting things like Chromatic Lantern, Commander's Fear, Dark Ceiling, and Gilded Lotus. Things that nobody really asked for.
Gilded Lotus used to be a chase card. It has been reprinted enough now with Dominaria being such a popular set. It's basically, with that printing, been essentially reprinted into the ground. And it just doesn't see as much play as the average CMC of most Commander decks is trending downward now. I believe on EDHREC.com, the average converted mana cost of a Commander deck is now 3.3.
Yes, I remember, like, when I first started playing EDH, Gilded Lotus and Chromatic Lantern were two almost, like, must-have inclusions in the decks that I used to play. And I think that the big turning point for them, aside from, you know, cards like Arcane Signet existing, was Modern Horizons, when they printed the rest of the Talisman sets. So now you've got any deck that needed fixing in terms of colors and artifact mana, I'd just rather run Talisman.
Yeah, so most fast mana rocks are, at this point, trending more toward the 2 cost, unless if it costs more than that, it's just not really going to accelerate you enough to be included. And it's not like that's even a budget issue, because All the Sigmunds, the Talismans, Felwar Stone, all that are two. And we could have a box full of those and it would be a lot more useful.
Agreed. And they even, like I mentioned during our What's in Our Cart for Commander Legends, they've even been reprinting some cards that used to be not even expensive, but harder to find, like the Mirage Cycle of Diamonds. Even Wizards, I think, is recognizing that the 2CMC slot seems to be the sweet spot that Commander players are looking for, and that's what we're seeing more of. Is there any other news that's happening right now during the winter lull, or should we get on to games we played?
Commander Collection Green.
Yes, it is out. I managed to get a copy of the non-shiny version. So Galta now has its own dedicated worldly tutor featuring Yisan on the artwork. And I'm putting the command tower into a new deck that I'm kind of brewing with at the moment. Gonna talk about that more once it's actually out of the stage of a pile of cards sitting on my coffee table.
I remember being like chatting with you guys on Discord as they were doing the reveal for this during the Commander Fest when they were talking about Commander Legends a bit, and they revealed, you know, the entire Commander Collection screen. I was so excited. That's like, you know, this is the product that they're printing. They're listing, they're printing cards that are worth it, you know, looking at you, Sylvan Library and Worldwood Tutor. And then with them getting rid of the MSRP and stuff like that, I'm just like, okay, you know, well, as we get close, we'll find out how much it's worth. And then they finally start appearing online for, you know, $80, $100 for the non-foil and upwards of $240 for the foil ones. And that was just, that there is the complete polar opposites of being super excited for this product and just being completely disheartened by this product at the same time.
So one thing that's kind of interesting is right now, the cheapest printing for Seedborn Muse and Worldly Tutor is the Commander Collection Green versions. So I actually just picked up two singles because I wanted those two particular cards. So while I did not get the full collection, I did pick up those two. I dig the art, and it's cheaper than the other versions.
Yeah, and the art is really, really nice on them. While I do kind of love the original Worldly Tutor art a lot, that's kind of got some nice nostalgic value for me. The new art with Yisan is pretty baller.
Dang, Sylvan Library too. It's almost half the price of any other printing of Sylvan Library.
See, I want, like, so for just the thematic of, like, hey, this is my deck, and I want to, my Omnath deck is my pet deck that I'm trying to bling out. Like, I want the foil Sol Ring, I want the foil Command Tower that is, you know, green. But just with the prices that, you know, people are selling them at because of allocation and all that, it's just insane.
Yeah, I did manage to get mine from the friendly local game shop. Again, shout out to Dungeon Games in Fort Myers in Florida. I don't know how many they wound up getting in stock, but you may want to check over there to see if they have any in stock later on after we finish recording. Alex, give them a call.
Maybe. I'll see if I can trade some stuff in for a foil one.
Yeah. I don't think they got any foils, unfortunately. The foil release seems to be really minimal.
You guys with your friendly local gaming stores, lucky.
Yeah.
Well, I do count ourselves as lucky. Masks are required.
Yeah, I do count ourselves as lucky, actually. Anyway, speaking of lucky, I think, once again, I'm the only person who has gotten any games in other than a couple weeks ago when Jake and I finished recording. We got our game of Commander Legends sealed in.
Yeah, we did.
So while I think you killed me in terms of value that you opened.
Yeah, the actual games definitely went to you. It turns out having removal in the command zone is pretty good. Basically, my entire deck was cast Chrom and hit with Chrom, and everything in there was based on that because I opened a bunch of junk otherwise. I think I played every black card I opened except for Vampiric Tutor.
Which my deck wound up teaming up the Planeswalker Tevish Zot with Halana Kesig Ranger, the 3 and a green for a 3/4 legendary creature human archer with reach. And whenever another creature enters the battlefield under your control, you may pay 2. And when you do, that creature deals damage equal to its power to target creature, and Halana has partner. So essentially, I could just cast a creature and also eat Chrom or eat any other creatures you happen to play and then just beat you up. Yeah, removal in the command zone is powerful.
I did not play, but I observed, and that is fairly accurate. Tess of Zot or Halana would resolve, and then Jake would just have a very bad day.
So hopefully we'll have Alex and I are planning on actually doing it in person, whether it's going to be a draft or sealed this coming weekend. Fingers crossed, we're going to try and get this happening. We got, I think, at least 2 boxes between our group to try to go through for some games. I mean, other than that, the only games I got in, one of my sisters, I mentioned, has joined our play group, and now another one of my sisters wants to start playing. So last weekend, we did a couple of quicker games using lower-powered decks. So we had our resident Yuriko player. We had my sister who plays reasonably regularly with her. Cycling Kenrith Returned King with the Fox, the partner. Not the partner, the companion. Not Lurus, the other one.
Fire
the
Fox, red-white one. Mozilla.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Zerda the Dawnwaker.
Yes.
Zerda the Dawnwaker. So she made a cycling deck out of that, and it's pretty cool. And I played the deck we're going to talk about today, my Oketra deck, against it. And it was actually a pretty good game, just because every time I wiped the board, she had another mass reanimation spell, because that's literally the whole point of the deck, is to cycle creatures away and then bring them all back and run people over. So it kind of felt like the Looney Tunes episode where Bugs Bunny and Donald Duck are just going back and forth, whether it's rabbit season or duck season. And it just turned into who top decked more. And as we'll get into, Oketra is kind of built to just try to grind out that value.
Alrighty. Let's get to it.
It seems like a good time as any. Yeah, so... So Oketra, I've talked about this deck quite a few times on the podcast. This is my mono white deck with God Eternal Oketra. So God Eternal Oketra is my commander that is 3/2 white for a 3/6 legendary creature zombie god with double strike. Whenever I cast a creature spell, create a 4/4 black zombie warrior creature token with vigilance. Vigilance being actually surprisingly nice in more lower powered games because you can attack kind of without fear. And then God Eternal Oketra has that God Eternal clause from War of the Spark. Whenever God Eternal Oketra dies or is put into exile from the battlefield, you may put it into its owner's library, third from the top. Which also winds up being surprisingly relevant because I'm playing mono white, and I usually, if I have to recast Oketra for 7 or 9, that would be a bad scene. And considering I'm playing mono white, I've also got a decent number of board wipes, so being able to avoid having to pay all that extra mana is surprisingly nice.
And as someone who's played against the deck a few times, getting rid of her is also quite annoying.
I have lots of really bad memories of Limited or the Spark. Somebody having one of these God Eternals, you just think, God, they don't go away.
No, she does not, and that's one of her strengths.
All right, so having played against Oketra, this is my opinion on what the deck strategy is. She's more of a value commander. A value deck prioritizes resource advantage over speed, optimizing for the long game, which, personal experience with Oketra, the longer that John is allowed to stay in the game and do things with Oketra, the worse it is for everybody else. Value decks tend to disrupt more focused opponents while creating and exploiting a resource imbalance to win. Also, letting John exist, it's like, oh, he's got a Scrap Trawler and a mono white deck that's doing things with Oketra. That's not a problem. Fast forward 2 or 3 turns later, getting hit in the face for 120 damage with, you know, zombie tokens.
Yeah, the deck definitely leans more into value than focus, which is a little bit weird for a mono white deck, but it's also not going to break any land speed records. I'm running every single value piece I basically can in mono white, and I will want to resolve a 5-mana creature as my payoff. So yeah, it's going to be a value deck just by virtue of that part of the mana curve alone.
I mean, it's as far as other mono-white decks, the only thing I've actually seen mono-white kind of go faster than that is probably Heliod, and that's only because the commander is, you know, 2 less to cast than Oketra is. That being said...
I'm also going to compare it, though, to just, like, the classic white weenie, just go-wide token decks, and in those cases, I think that Oketra is a little bit more value-leaning than focused, because Oketra's entire role is just to rebuild and turn any creature in hand essentially into an army.
And does help with like the issue that those decks have of late game top decking little dorky creatures. You'll at least get 2 bodies out of each one.
And one of the bodies is surprisingly more and more relevant as mana curves go down.
So that's the strategy as far as quadrant. Where do you think in our fancy deck quadrant matrix you would plop God Eternal Oketra? Is this going to be an optimized linear deck?
No, God, no. It's going to fall somewhere between casual and chaotic, probably a little bit more towards chaotic at this point. Casual decks are just all about variety and gameplay experience, looking for more spicy cards to include as opposed to optimized cards. Like pre-cons often fit into this environment. Chaotic, on the other hand, is just still going to favor that variety of gameplay, but it does start to include some elements of efficiency, these decks don't always have a core game plan that is really easy to execute, which kind of fits Oketra to a T. So while these may include some efficient cards, the heavy lean towards variety means that these are usually pretty appropriate for our more balanced games together. Basically, Oketra has a plan, but as we'll see, it doesn't have a lot of ways to consistently get that plan off the ground and tends to just make do with whatever pieces of junk, I managed to pull out of the deck and try to turn into value with Oketra.
Now, if you were to add, if you were to up the number of tutors in the deck, because I know you don't run a lot aside from, I believe, Enlightened, and then, the Scrapyard Recombiner, if you want to go with something of that one. If you were to throw more in there, do you think it could lean more of a focused way to where it's not just playing junk in your hand, but, constantly getting towards it?
It's a possibility, but the number of tutors that actually exist in Mono White to do that, beyond Enlightened Tutor, there's not much. Because at that point, you're going to be tutoring more for auras and equipment, which the deck, other than a single equipment tutor in Stoneforge Mystic, doesn't really have. So the deck is more about just trying to have consistent card draw as opposed to a lot of tutors. And there's just not many options in Mono White to tutor for artifact combo pieces.
All right, so looking at that, and we talk about things that, you tutor up the junk you have, what are some of the themes that the deck does? Because, we talk about the token generation, obviously.
So there's a big go-wide theme, just trying to fill the board with lots of bodies and overwhelm opponents with sheer numbers, which obviously Gato-Eternal Oketra does by herself. But I've also included some cards like Anointed Procession, which probably doesn't need too much of an introduction at this point, the amount of times that it's been talked about and we've talked about. 3 and a white for an enchantment. Whenever you would create one or more tokens, you create twice that many tokens instead.
Yep, it's a white doubling season.
Yeah, it's Parallel Lives.
Yeah, Parallel Lives. I keep forgetting doubling season is the end-all be-all.
Yes, but doubling season is in fact the end-all be-all. And just turning a 1 or 2 CMC creature spell into 2 4/4 vigilant bodies is really nice.
So we've already mentioned it a couple times. I know you're also running the Scrap Trawler loops or value pieces. What's your ideal setup on this? I know you've got a Scrap Trawler and Junk Diver and Mirror Retriever and a couple other bits like that.
Yeah, also including Teshar, Ancestor's Apostle, which is 3 and a white for a 2/2 legendary creature bird cleric with flying. And whenever you cast a historic spell, so artifacts, legendaries, and sagas are historic, you return target creature card with the converted mana cost 3 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield. Originally, this deck was going to be a Teshar deck, but I specifically wanted a deck that would be a lot lower in power level and a lot slower so that I could play with people who were newer to the game and people who had lower power decks in general. So Gato-Eternal Oketra just kind of seemed like a little bit easier of a choice over Teshar. But also important parts of that loop are to have sacrifice outlets, and in this case, cards like Kark Clan Ironworks, 4 mana for an artifact, sacrifice an artifact, add 2 colorless mana to your mana pool. Having a free sac outlet to throw creatures away with to get the loop going is one of the ways the deck has to close out the game.
So since you are playing mono white, and white is kind of known for having a lot of hate bears, especially in our other Discord meta, are you rolling with any of those obnoxious, horrendous pieces?
Not all of them, but like I said in the show notes, look, I'm playing mono white. Everyone else needs to slow down a little bit so I can keep up. So cards like Blind Obedience and similar Kismet type effects, where you are going to force other people's stuff to come into play untapped. Number one, it plays in fairly well to the beatdown plan of hitting people with giant 4/4 zombie tokens. On the other hand, though, it is also just useful to stop the more powerful decks that are looking for their creatures and artifacts to enter play untapped. And if I'm looping cards, I can at least start draining people off of Blind Obedience to get them closer to the point where I can take them down with an Alpha Strike. I'm also running cards like Spirit of the Labyrinth. Spirit of the Labyrinth is an enchantment creature from the original Theros block, and it is a 3/1 for 1 and a white enchantment creature spirit. Each player can't draw more than one card each turn. Let's just all play like playing mono white.
That's one thing that I know you've brought up before in the past, these stacks pieces that kind of bring everybody down to the same level of playing fair Magic. It's a lot more impactful for people that are, you know, planning to draw 7-8 cards a turn, or who are trying to ramp out with a bunch of rocks. And it's much less punishing on decks that have like a bunch of come into play tapped lands or stuff along those lines.
Yeah, which is kind of the style of deck I want to have if I'm sitting down watching a new player literally pull a precon out of the box for the first time. Like, Blind Obedience is not going to do too much against that player, but the person who's sitting across from him saying, oh yes, my Animar deck, it's perfectly fair, don't worry, that player is going to get slowed down quite a bit more.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those, like, I don't think the light Kismet effects are that bad in terms of, you know, what it actually does to impact. Like, it slows them down, but it's not, like, crippling. It's not like you're playing Stasis or anything of that nature.
Yeah.
And it's things like you mentioned, I have land hex in there, but things like Blind Obedience, Spin, Labyrinth, Arson, it's like, they're not inherently bad. It's not like you're locking people out using things like, you know, Rest in Peace, Gravedigger's Cage, and things of that nature, to where it's like, okay, now these decks are shut down entirely.
Right, right. Like, I'll also run Aura of Silence in the deck, which is 1 and 2 white for an enchantment, and it states that artifact and enchantment spells my opponents cast cost 2 more to cast. Again, the slower, more casual decks are going to be hurt by that less because they are not as dependent on ramping out with fast mana to get ahead. And they can play the slower, more plotting game plan of play a land, play a creature, go. And then Aura of Silence also has that nice secondary mode of I can just sacrifice it when it's already on the field to get rid of a troublesome artifact or enchantment one of my opponents is playing. So it's kind of the direction I just wanted to take this deck in.
So this, I mean, so the other ones, and it's been more common, are the one spell a turn kind of enchantments and effects that exist, like Deafening Silence. Do you run anything like those? Have you ever considered putting those in?
I've considered putting them in, but it hurts the deck a little bit more than I'd care to admit, just because eventually I do want to start looping my own Scrap Trawler loops as one potential way to end the game. And I do kind of subscribe to the deck building theory that some pretty prolific deck builders out there, such as Brutter, one of the originators in CEDH of the mid-ranged Ad Nauseam decks, always kind of preached you'd never want to be tripping over your own stacks pieces when you're trying to combo out and win. So I don't include those just because if I reach a turn where I actually have my 5-piece engine to start looping Scrap Trawler effects, I don't want to also have to dig for a way to get rid of a Rule of Law effect.
All fair points.
And then, like, the most of the deck, honestly, is just the mono-white good stuff. Like, I'm playing mono-white. I've got to take what I can get. And there's only so many options that exist in order to make the deck actually, I would say, reasonably effective. So, yes, I'm running Smothering Tithe. I'm running Land Tax. I'm running Austere Command. I'm running Divine Visitation. Like, my options are limited. I've got to take my good cards where I can get them. They don't get printed too often, and I want to take advantage of them where I can.
I don't think anyone begrudges you running Smothering Tithe. I think anyone that's playing a white is running Smothering Tithe.
Yeah, it's a pretty nice card.
It's a 4-mana enchantment that makes its way into competitive EDH decks. So, it's pretty good.
That it is.
So, what, now that we've kind of gone over what your deck does, what does the gameplay look like when you sit down and actually play with this deck? Like, what are you trying to do on your early game turns?
So early game, the deck really wants some effective and repeatable form of either ramp or draw to have a keepable hand. So, like, there's enough density of creatures that I'm not too worried about drawing into one so that I can start triggering Oketra. But repeatable draw is, like, I mentioned one of the value that Oketra brings to the table is you essentially don't have to pay any commander tax with her. You just put her back third from the top in your deck. Having access to a way to even to just draw one extra card per turn means that the amount of time that Oketra is in your library and not in your hand is fairly minimal. Having a way to get comfortably up to 5 or 6 mana with the deck with a repeatable form of draw or ramp is very, very nice. If I don't have a good repeatable form of ramp, then I, like I mentioned before, I added some modal double face cards to the deck. For all intents and purposes, they're tap lands that I'm just going to play out early. If I do have a repeatable ramp source, like just land tax, or I have an easy artifact that I can drop for early mana, then there are at least decent spells that are a land slot in the mid-game or late-game that I could just cast later if I need to. So basically, my criteria for a decent hand early game and my plan early game is just to establish some kind of an engine. I get to play some interesting cards being in a mono-white deck that really don't see play a whole lot of other places. For example, last week I got a lot of value off of Endless Atlas. It's a 2-mana artifact, which is 2-tap draw a card. Activate this ability only if you control 3 or more lands with the same name. And I'm running 24 planes, and I had land tax, so yeah. Wound up working just fine as a way to draw extra cards. The deck also gets to be a little bit fast and loose, having a lot of scrap trawler elements with using cards like Mindstone, a 2-mana artifact that you can tap for a colorless, or pay 1, tap and sacrifice it to draw a card, or Commander's Sphere, 3-mana for an artifact that taps for a mana of any color, and you can sacrifice it to draw a card. Just ways to turn rocks into card draw later on.
All right, so you got that. You've got the early game plan and what it leads into. At what point in time do you shift from, you know, getting an engine online to going to like win mode? So, you know, you get to the mid part of the game, you're creating your zombie tokens. Like, what's the feel transitioning from early to mid game and, you know, picking what strategy to go on?
Oketra. when can I cast Oketra? When can I start making zombies? That's essentially when the deck is shifting. And the real question just winds up being, can I plot out a turn where I can cast Oketra and then cast a 1 or a 2 drop to immediately get a zombie online as well? Which is why I have a lot of effects that are stapled onto like 1, 2, or 3 mana cards that I just kind of want anyway. So if I'm able to ramp out effectively, if I can drop Oketra and then, for example, cast a Giant Killer, who is a 1-mana 1-2, you can pay 1 and a white to tap a creature, like not amazing on its own. It's mostly in there for the adventure part of the card, which is chop down 2 and a white for an instant, destroy target creature with power 4 or greater. I call that a Korvold Killer.
Yeah.
Which is primarily the reason the card is in the deck, but if I don't see a Korvold in sight, I'm happy to just play that when I have 6 mana up to cast Oketra, cast Giant Killer, and get a 4-4 out of the deal.
And I imagine once you've got Oketra online, Recruiter of the Guard probably has to be one of the cards you're most excited to see at that point, because you can play it out and then start building towards something. Or are there any other cards that once you get to Oketra, that it's like, okay, I've got Oketra in play, I want to go ahead and I want to make sure I draw these 1, 2, 3 next cards to elevate me from mid to late game. So, I mean...
Yeah, so Recruiter of the Guard is 2 and a white for a 1/1 creature human soldier. When Recruiter of the Guard enters the battlefield, you may search your library for a creature card with a toughness of 2 or less and reveal it and put it into your hand, then shuffle your library. So the rare tutor effect in white, and in this case, it gets all of my graveyard getter backers, including Scrap Trawler, which is... Do I really have to read Scrap Trawler? I mean, I feel like by this point, everyone knows what it is.
Right, so
3 mana for an artifact creature construct, which is relevant. It is a 3-2. Whenever a Scrap Trawler or another artifact you control is put into a graveyard from the battlefield, return to your hand target artifact card in your graveyard with a lesser converted mana cost. That is relevant because, as we mentioned, I'm also running Scrapyard Recombiner, another construct, a 3-mana 0/0 artifact creature with modular 2. So when it enters the battlefield with 2 +1/+1 counters on it, and when it dies, you can put a +1/+1 counter, it's +1/+1 counters on target artifact creature. So its text reads, you can tap and sacrifice an artifact. If you do, you get to go and look for a construct card from your library, reveal it, put it into your hand, and then shuffle your library. So importantly, Scrap Trawler is a construct, and so is another one of my graveyard getter backers in Workshop Assistant, 3 mana for a 1/2 artifact creature construct. Whenever it dies, return target artifact card from your graveyard to your hand, which sounds a lot like Mirror Retriever, the 2-mana version of this for a 1/1 mirror.
Gotcha. So you've got Oketra online. The turn it comes out, you manage to play something simple like a Weathered Wayfarer. Better late than never, but it nets you a zombie. Next turn, rip off the top of the deck, Recruiter of the Guard. What's the card you go get immediately after that?
Oftentimes it will be Scrap Trawler, but there's quite a few options. If I'm just going to try to... who am I kidding? It's going to be Scrap Trawler. It is almost always going to be Scrap Trawler at that point. It is in there pretty much exclusively just to get Scrap Trawler. There are going to be times when I'm going to try to look for something else, and you'll notice that like a lot of my removal is stapled onto creatures in this deck. So one of the inclusions I added with the release of Zendikar was the Skyclave Apparition, a 3-mana 1/2 white for a 2/2 creature's core spirit. When it enters the battlefield, exile up to one target non-land, non-token permanent you don't control with a CMC of 4 or less. And when Skyclave Apparition leaves the battlefield, the exiled card's owner creates an XX blue illusion creature token, where X is the converted mana cost of the exiled card. I think with the few reanimation effects the deck is running, like Sun Titan and Emyria Angel, I managed to loop that like 3 or 4 times during my game last week against a reanimator deck, proved to be pretty effective.
It's also kind of convenient that the largest that thing can be is smaller than your zombies.
Well, it's CMC, but the token, usually, yeah.
Well, yeah, but it's 3 or less.
Yep. 4 or less, actually. So I can actually tussle with them. They could potentially trade with it, but I'm fine with that.
I mean, your zombies are expendable fodder anyways.
Exactly. No matter how big they are, they're still expendable fodder, particularly when they have vigilance, and I can just say math is for blockers and send them in.
So, and this is going from personal experience with you trying to deal with your board once the Recruit of the Guard Scrap Trawler shenanigans have resolved. Normally, the first thing I try, because it's kind of the catch-all, is board wiping. There are times where board wiping has been incredibly effective, mainly when you don't have a Scrap Trawler engine or elements in place that, you know, can help get them back. That being said, once the engine is going, board wiping is kind of less of a hindrance. It's kind of like, oh, I have to take a turn to get back to where I was. Big inconvenience. Carry on. What do you have in place aside from just having established the engine for board wipes?
So, again, I'm running mono white, so my options are pretty limited. I've already mentioned Sun Titan type of effects, so the deck is pretty good about getting back low CMC creatures. So 3 mana or less creatures off of Sun Titan when it enters the battlefield or attacks. You can also get creatures with power 2 or less off of cards like Revelark, or just any card back with cards like Karmic Guide or Emyria Shepherd. Emyria Shepherd's probably a little bit less known. That is 5/2 white for a 4/4 creature angel with flying, and that has landfall. Whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, you may return target non-land permanent card from your graveyard to your hand. If that land is a plains, you may return that non-land permanent card to the battlefield instead. So often I will get into situations where I have Emyria Shepherd carrying a Sword of the Animist and just attacking in, getting a land drop that's a plains, and getting a creature back or just another value piece back from my graveyard.
It's funny you actually tap on that. This is a bit of a segue, but one of the decks I have is my Omnath deck, and there was a long conversation I had with myself, so I was representing both points, as to whether Sword of the Animist actually made it into the deck or not, simply because, oh, I'm going to throw this on something that has landfall. Well, I'm guaranteed to hit that trigger every time something happens. But yeah, it's an interesting point that you prove, considering what, you know, Mirror Angel does when land enters the battlefield. So it's definitely a powerful effect. If you can,
it's a powerful effect, yeah. But I'm also playing mono white, so I need every way to ramp that I can. So of course I'm going to run the Sword of the Animist because I don't have a lot of other options, and it is absolutely good enough reason almost by itself just to have a Stoneforge Mystic in the deck.
Sort of ramp.
Yeah, and it's nice to have the. I saw that you have 2 equipment in here, so just in case you draw, you know, your Skull Clamp or your Sword of the Animist, you still have a valid target for Stoneforge.
Mm-hmm. And it's also kind of nice that Stoneforge only costs 2 mana, so worst case scenario, it is a core that also brings a zombie with it.
It's good enough for
good enough for mono white work. Good enough for mono white work.
Now you're just missing 4 to 16 Squadron Hawks, and you'll be all set.
I wish.
I mean, you do have a Hawk variant in the deck, so.
Yeah, the Cartographer's Hawk. Like, so this card was fairly interesting when it first got spoiled because it did start to represent some mono-white ramp. So it is 1 and a white for a 2/1 creature bird with flying. When it deals combat damage to a player who controls more lands than you do, return it to its owner's hand. If you do, you may search your library for a Plains card, put that it onto the battlefield tapped, and then shuffle your library.
Why?
You have to return Cartographer's Hawk to your hand, but in this deck, that's a feature, not a drawback, because then I get another zombie.
It's intended functionality.
Yeah, it actually does what the deck wants it to do. Like, I don't think Cartographer's Hawk is a mono-white staple. when it first came out, our options for ramp are pretty minimal. I mean, our options for ramp and mono white are still pretty minimal, but I feel like Cartographer's Hawk in most decks doesn't make the cut. But in this deck, it does kind of everything I want. So yeah, it's staying in.
Helps ramp, generates zombies. So it's pretty solid.
Yeah, like the classic Oketra deck on EDH Rec is going to be running a lot of self-bouncing creatures like White Mane Lion or Core Skyfisher. This deck kind of, instead of that package, opts for the Scrap Trawler package because, well, I'm John. Have you met me? I like to run Scrap Trawler. So that went in there instead.
I have heard that.
Yeah, like each one of us has like secret commanders. Like we build decks, but the commander's really blank. So I mean, Jake's secret commanders ad nauseum is a surprise there. John's is Scrap Trawler. Mine, I think, would just be a basic forest. Surprise, there's green. Alright, so we're there. We've got the loops going. Despite my best efforts to board wipe you, it hasn't made a difference. How are you closing this?
Usually, honestly, it's just swinging out and beating face with Vigilant 4-4 zombies and a 3-6 double striker and whatever other creatures I happen to land on the field. Hopefully the zombies, I have enough damage represented that you're not really going to be trying to block for value. You're going to be blocking to preserve life total at that point. So hopefully I'm at least keeping my value creatures alive if possible. I'd say 9 times out of 10 that is how the deck closes things out, but it does have Scrap Trawler loops that can combo, but there's so few combo pieces in the deck it doesn't happen very often, hence why I would put this deck more in that chaotic quadrant than anywhere near the linear quadrant. So
the traditional
you're just trying to naturally draw into them.
Yeah, I mean, if I draw into them, if the game goes that long, yeah, I can close out the game. So in order to do it, I've got to have a cost reducer, and then so a card like Foundry Inspector, which is a 3-mana 3/2 that reduces the cost of artifacts by 1. Then I have to have a card like Ashnod's Altar or KrokClan Ironworks to get at least 2-mana each time I sacrifice a creature. Then I need to have Scrap Trawler or Mirror Retriever, or I need at least 2 of those cards. And if I do that while I have Oketra on the field, I can immediately cast an infinite number of creatures and have an infinite number of 4/4 zombie tokens with Summoning Sickness. So at that point, there's a turn of the table for everybody to try to dig for an answer. And if they don't have it, then I can end the game.
And there's not much you can really do in terms of haste, aside from just boots. There's no
way. And yeah, I'm not gonna... Yeah, it's not worth the slot of this deck. I think that's perfectly fair to... There's my infinite combo. There's an infinite number... Or there's an unbounded number of 4/4 Vigilant Zombies. Go... Can you get rid of these zombies before it comes back to me? I think that's pretty reasonable for a deck that has pretty much no way to assemble the combo outside of drawing into it.
That's fair.
I have also used Altar of Dementia as one of the sac outlets in the past too, which is one of the reasons it remains in the deck, to mill everybody out of the game. That has happened exactly 1 time. And honestly, Altar of Dementia is primarily in there just as a free sac outlet. I'm not sure if I still needed it anymore because now I have a spare Arcbound Ravager in the deck, which may be enough by itself because it's another artifact creature that acts as a Salk outlet. So I'm not sure. It may be a cut later on.
All right. And that is how we die. That is how we meet our ends to God Eternal Oketra. The cats have claws, they hurt. And it's not like her tokens are, you know, anything to sneeze at. This isn't like Rise of the Redeemed, where it's like, I've got a bunch of 1/1s. I can make them bigger, but they're still 1/1s. These are 4/4 Vigilant Zombies that come down every time. So, I mean, they're nothing to sneeze at. They're larger than the average, you know, creature you play, you know, early game, just out of hand.
Yeah, they're bigger boys. They can do some more tussling.
What do hands leading into the beginning of the game go? So, mulligans, is that widely determined by what you know you're playing against, or are there a set of rules that you kind of follow regardless of what your opponent is playing?
So actually, this last week's episode of Limited Resources was an episode on heuristics, and I'm going to paraphrase something that LSV said. The lower your overall card quality is, the more important having a quantity of reasonable cards is kind of important to keep around. So with this deck, I pretty much am looking for 2 to 3 lands, usually leaning more closer to 3 lands than 2 lands, just with the amount of card draw the deck has available to it. Some form of repeatable card draw or ramp, That's kind of it. I would, this deck would not be very happy going down to 6 cards or 5 cards. That is really bad for a mono white deck that already has trouble drawing cards as is. You're going to fall really far behind if you go to get too aggressive with mulliganing.
So what if one of those cards in this case is something like Weathered Wayfarer land tax? Does that change the equation at all?
So at that point, I have my repeatable form of ramp to be able to keep things going, and the hand is much more likely to look keepable.
Gotcha. And I imagine in this case, land tax is a bit more desirable than Weathered Wayfarer is.
I mean, it's hard to say in terms of ramp in mono white or just card advantage in mono white. Yeah, land tax is really hard to beat, particularly in our group when I'll often be facing off against one of Alex's decks, which you like to land ramp and landfall, as we've established.
I do. It's also the fact that it's land tax is a bit harder to remove as well.
Right. And in all honesty, too, there are times where I will keep a hand that's a little bit more questionable if I have a sweeper already in hand, like if I have Austere Command or if I have another card that will get rid of large numbers of creatures, because we do have a lot of token-based decks in the game in our playgroup, and being able to have an answer to those, which often will get off to a faster start than me, it is nice to have.
Gotcha. All right, so I figure we can do some test ones here.
I've got the deck pulled up in Moxfield, so we'll deal a hand. Let's see what we get.
All right.
Okay, so this hand is Emeria, the Sky Ruin, Krark, Clan Ironworks, Expedition Map, Altar of Dementia, Plains, Spirit of the Labyrinth, and Seagate Wreckage.
All right.
This so hand you've got your 3 lands.
Yep.
Only, well, I mean, kind of. One of them doesn't produce white. You've got your Expedition Map, you've got 2 sac outlets, and a Stax piece.
So it does have a repeatable form of card draw in Seagate Wreckage. So it's a colorless land that taps for colorless, enters the battlefield untapped, but you can tap it and pay 2 and a colorless to draw a card. You can only activate this if you have no cards in hand. I don't have a repeatable source of card draw other than that or ramp, but I do have Spirit of the Labyrinth for a turn 2 play to try to slow down my opponents. I would, depending on who I was sitting up against, while it's really tempting to have Krark Clan Ironworks in my hand and to have Expedition Map in hand, I don't really have any value lands that I would probably be trying to go to get off of this. If Altar of Dementia or Krark Clan Ironworks were instead even just a Mere Retriever, I would probably look to keep it and consider bouncing Expedition Map with Mere Retriever's Death Trigger to be a good enough source of repeatable card advantage slash ramp that I would consider this hand. But I would probably try to be a little bit greedy unless I had a deck like someone playing Edric Spymaster of Trest or some other fast deck that's trying to draw a ton of cards where I'd be leaning on Spirit of the Labyrinth to hold them back. I would probably throw this back and go for a second 7.
Yeah, especially since you do get another full 7.
Yeah.
All right, well, I hope you like lands. this hand is Plains, 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 Emeria the Sky Ruin, Mindstone, Aven Mind Sensor, and Tashar.
So I do get the option to draw off of Mindstone. I do have a way to slow down other decks with Aven Mind Sensor. Tashar is really nice as just a value piece. So I can see a scenario where I'm flashing out Aven Mind Sensor on turn 3 after I resolve Mindstone on turn 2, just to stop somebody who is potentially trying to ramp or search for something nasty. This being my second 7, I probably would lean towards keeping this one because going to 6 just sounds kind of rough. And I have at least one way to get a little bit ahead with mana, and I can cash that in for card draw if I do wind up drawing into more mana later. Yeah, I would keep this one.
Yeah, it gives you something to plan for the first couple turns, and probably actually be able to get into casting your Oketra.
Yeah. The only thing I'd personally want to swap out from this hand, probably Aven Mind Sensor for something with a bit more utility, but just to feel like I'm moving forward, just be able to take advantage of Tashar early on. To kind of get going, but slowing opponents down, depending on, I guess, who you're sitting across, Aven Mind Sensor would be solid.
Yeah.
All right, let's see what we get for our next hand.
So, fresh 7.
All right, we've got Dispeller's Capsule, Field of Souls, 2 Planes, Skull Clamp, Arcbound Ravager, and Oketra's Monument.
Yeah, hard snap keep. Even if I don't have like a really good path to more mana, I don't have a reliable source of mana advantage. I have two token generators here in Oketra's Monument, probably being the stronger of the two, the three mana artifact that white creature spells cost one less, so easier to get Oketra. And whenever I cast a creature spell, I make a 1/1 white warrior creature token with vigilance. Those warriors look really good when you put a skull clamp on them. Similarly, Field of Souls is a 4-mana enchantment, 2/2 white. Whenever a non-token creature I control is put into my graveyard from the battlefield, I put a 1/1 white spirit creature token with flying onto the battlefield. Again, those things would look really pretty with a skull clamp attached to them. Dispeller's Capsule is just a nice onboard answer to an artifact or enchantment that is causing issues that I can get back with Scrap Trawler Loops. I have a sac outlet with Arcbound Ravager. And if I'm in a bad situation, I also don't mind just, I'm not top decking lands, I'm getting stuck, I'll throw the Skull Clamp right onto Arcbound Ravager and draw two cards off of it. I'm not shy about doing that if I'm stuck.
It definitely seems like the strongest hand we've looked at so far.
And you'll notice that it, like, strong means that, hey, I've got plays for the first two or three turns of the game, and I could potentially draw into something useful at some point.
Yeah, but Oketra's Monument Skull Clamp stay relevant for a really extended amount of time with what the deck wants to do.
Exactly. So, yeah, I'd say that this 7 is a keeper.
All right, let's look at one more hand.
Sounds good.
So here's a fresh 7. We've got two planes, Oketra's Monument, Tragic Arrogance, Seagate Wreckage, Castle Ardenvale, and Terrain Generator.
So Tragic Arrogance is probably the strongest board wipe in the deck. So it's a 5-mana board wipe for 3/2 white, a sorcery. For each player, you, the caster, choose from among permanents that player controls an artifact, a creature, an enchantment, and a planeswalker. Then each player sacrifices all other non-land permanents that player controls. So each player controls. So basically, you get to pick the worst things that your opponents have. They get to keep those, and then they sacrifice the rest, which means it gets around indestructible. It gets around even some tricky things where you can tell them that the mirror creature token they have is the creature they're going to select and the artifact they're going to select, and then they'll lose all their other artifacts and creatures at the same time. It is a powerful, powerful board wipe, and probably the strongest board wipe in the deck. It also lets you keep your value pieces around, so I can keep my Oketra online, or if I have a draw engine I can keep something else that's useful. Terrain Generator is, when combined with a source of card draw, a pretty strong way to get ahead on lands. So Terrain Generator taps for colorless mana, pay 2, tap it, and put a basic land card from your hand into play tapped. Castle Ardenvale is another way I can make creature tokens. But I have no real clear path to getting ahead with this hand. I don't have any real, other than Seagate Wreckage again, and this is not going to be a hand I'm going to play out quickly, so Seagate Wreckage is probably not going to draw us a lot of cards. I'd probably go for a second 7 with this one.
Yeah, I was going to say, if the last hand was the most direct one that we've seen, this has to be its polar opposite, other than, you know, 7 planes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is basically, try to stay in the game until you can cast Oketra.
Yeah, exactly.
On curve.
All right, so we'll get our second 7 then. Already looking better. We've got Mirror Retriever, two planes, Bonder's Enclave, Bygone Bishop, Enlightened Tutor, and Kark Clan Ironworks.
So we are pretty close to just having the Scrap Trawler Loop online almost right from there. Mirror Retriever is with Kark Clan Ironworks is free to cast. If we can find one more cost reducer, we're there. Enlightened Tutor to get Scrap Trawler with Kark Clan Ironworks. So importantly, you can't loop Mirror Retriever, or you can't loop a card by itself with Scrap Trawler, which slows the deck down significantly. But there's just, you really don't mind just throwing away a Mirror Retriever early game to get a little bit of extra mana just to ramp out Oketra or anything else. Bygone Bishop is absolutely a very reasonable form of repeatable card draw with the deck. So it's a 3 mana flying spirit cleric. It's 2 and a white for a 2/3. Whenever you cast a creature spell with a converted mana cost of 3 or less, you investigate, so you create a colorless clue, which you can crack for 2 mana to draw a card. Bonder's Enclave is going to turn on and let you draw cards just for having a creature with a power 4 or greater in play. It costs 3 mana and a tap to draw a card off of it. I'm going to have zombie tokens pretty quickly with this hand, so I'm happy to keep that around as another repeatable form of draw. This hand kind of has everything that I want. It is probably the right play to do Plains turn 1 Enlightened Tutor just for a Soul Ring and not really be greedy with it, because there's probably enough draw that just getting Oketra online is probably the smart move.
I mean, I would keep this hand. You can't really go wrong Enlightening Tutor for a Soul Ring.
Unless you do it for a Mana Crypt.
I'm not running.
There's no staples. Nothing from my staples binder is in this deck currently. So no Mana Crypt for me in this one.
All right. So that's a decent amount of sample hands. Up next, let's go over a couple cards that Alex and I have looked at that we think might warrant inclusion or at least consideration.
Like Mana Crypt.
You want to go first? Nah. You go first, Alex.
The two that come to mind kind of fit with kind of the themology and what you want to do with the deck. The first one is Archer Araska. You've got a couple lands in Bonder's Enclave, Seagate Wreckage, where you draw cards based off of, you know, certain elements being in play, no cards in hand, creature power 4 or greater. And I think Archer Araska is just a land, generates colorless mana, and 5 tap, draw card. Activate this ability only if you have the City's Blessing, which you need to ascend to get, and that happens if you control 10 or more permanents, which I believe is relatively easy for you to do. So while it does cost a bit more to activate in terms of the card draw, I think it's the easiest one for you to do as well.
That's reasonable. 6 mana is a lot for card draw, but I'm playing mono white, so yeah, I'm going to put this one into the maybe board at least. It would probably get the cut over Seagate Wreckage, just because this deck is a lot less likely to empty its hand out than a deck like Torbran, which tends to empty its hand out a lot faster, and it's quote-unquote card advantage tends to just play the impulsive draw effects as opposed to actual draw effects. That's a pretty reasonable swap. Okay.
And the other one is from Commander Legends. It's a Keeper of the Accord. It is a 4 mana, 3 and a white, 3/4 human creature soldier. At the beginning of each opponent's end step, if that player controls more creatures than you, create a 1/1 white soldier creature token. At the beginning of each opponent's end step, if that player controls more lands than you, you may put Searchlight before a basic Plains card and put it onto the battlefield tapped, then shuffle your library.
Yeah, I have not updated this deck yet for Commander Legends, but I think I'm 99% sure Keeper of the Accord is on the very short list of cards that will be going into this. With our playgroup, I'm probably going to get at least 1 or 2 lands every turn cycle off of Keeper of the Accord before I catch back up.
Off of just
and
me.
I am fine with that. And I will probably even get a soldier creature token just with one of our players enjoys the Renan Siri deck to get a bunch of dogs and cats. So in spite of this deck's ability to go wide, there are decks that go wider. And I would not be surprised if every now and then that first clause on Keeper of the Accord is actually relevant.
And you're mono white, so you take what you can get.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. And also, as we said before, that art.
Yes, that art is amazing.
All right, I've got a couple cards that might be worth looking at.
All right.
The first is an oldie, Gold Mirror. It's a 1/1 artifact creature for 2, and it has tap, add white.
It is definitely a 2-mana rock, and it definitely triggers Oketra. You know, I'll be honest, I would look at these cards as just kind of like garbage dorks.
Well, to be fair, the pool of cards in mono white.
Okay. That's true. I got to look at this again because I didn't even have this on my radar and I really should have. Good call.
So yeah, the idea is that it's either going to help you ramp into Oketra or get value out of having Oketra out. So hopefully it's not going to ever be a dead draw. Mm-hmm. Also, it fits in with all your trawler loops and crap.
True.
Another one is not... So I've got Containment Priest as the next one. So it's a 2-mana 2/2 with flash. And mm-hmm. if a non-token creature would enter the battlefield and it wasn't cast, exile it instead. So this is actually a stand-in for a bunch of different kinds of cards. I was thinking of just kind of playing on the flash angle and trying to get a couple more cheap white flash creatures, of which there's a couple, like that lion that I forgot the name of.
White Mane Lion, yeah.
Yes, White Mane Lion. So that's another 2/2 with flash that also bounces a creature. So these would let you get instant speed triggers off of Oketra to use as like combat tricks or end of turn type of things. Plus True. Just the inherent utility that a lot of these creatures have, like Hate Bearing with Containment Priest.
The only hesitation I have with Containment Priest, and it's a small one, honestly, is I have leaned really hard on cards like Emiria Shepherd before. And Teshar, it is a non-bow with those since it will exile anything that those guys are getting back. It is probably, honestly, it is probably better than Emiria Shepherd. I don't know. I have to think about it.
Yeah, this would be like a meta-dependent thing if you're going into a lot of reanimation type of metas or Hulk type of things. So that's just a peace, consideration. Hulk. Hulk's still legal. another potential inclusion would be Scroll Rack. It was recently reprinted in Commander Legends, so two-mana artifact. One tap, exile any number of cards in your hand, and put that many cards from the top of your library into your hand, and then put the exile cards on top of your library. It's really awkward wording, basically just switching cards from your hand to your library. You could use this to, one, get Oketra back if she dies. You don't have to wait quite as long for naturally drawing or using your draw engine. But it would also add some value to your land tax effects. Because I know a lot of the time once you have a land tax online, you wind up with like a handful of planes. And you're just kind of sitting there going, hooray, I have enough basics for the rest of the game. This way you could at least temporarily turn them into some other cards.
You know, you make a really good point there. I had kind of slept on Scroll Rack just because it is one of the cards that I couldn't justify putting into the deck originally with the just it was stably enough that I had it in my staples binder when I was building this deck. Currently I don't have it in any decks, and with looking at like costs for the reprint, it's down to like $31-$32. It's probably time to just have another one in terms of value. And like old school white value in Commander was literally land tax plus Scroll Rack to get three cards and essentially get to brainstorm every turn with Scroll Rack. Yeah, I think I've got to find room for a Scroll Rack, and I've got to place an order for another Scroll Rack.
Well, I'm terribly sorry.
That's okay.
Your suggestion cost him $30, Jake.
So my last suggestion is actually one I just came up with, and probably fits what I was thinking for Containment Priest even better. So Shimmer Mirror. Yet another mirror. So this is a 3-mana 2/2 mirror with flash, and you can cast artifact spells as though they had flash. So, yeah, just more flashy enablers for flashy for Oketra. And again, it would lean a little bit more in on the artifact angle. You don't have as many artifact creatures currently, but you know, if you add Gold Mirror and maybe a couple others, that could be a direction to go.
Yeah, I like that a little bit better than Containment Priest. I think Containment Priest is the stronger card overall. And if I were trying to make this a more focused deck, I would run Containment Priest and probably just lose the more clunky top end Karmic Guide and Revel Arc and Emiria Shepherd. But leaning more value, I think it's going to just wind up being Shimmer Mirror is a little bit stronger of a match for the deck. Just not sure what to cut for these cards yet. I guess we'll figure that out at some point. Any of these sticking out as like cards that should probably be cut?
Vesper Lark.
Yeah, Vesper Lark is probably, it's enough of a vestigial at this point. Vesper Lark came out of Modern Horizons. It is 2 and a white for a 2/1 elemental with flying. When it leaves the battlefield, return target creature card with power 1 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield. So it gets back a few relevant creatures in the deck, but probably not enough to be useful. And then it has the evoke for 1 and a white, where you cast it and immediately sacrifice it. Yeah, I don't think there's enough usefulness left for that card at this point. That one I can probably cut pretty easily. And then I think I already mentioned Seagate Wreckage. I can probably cut for another land, whether it be Gate of Arasca.
Archer Araska.
Arch of Araska. Okay. Sorry. Gates. Arches. Hard to follow.
What's it called? You also mentioned that Giant Killer / Chop Down was, depending on who you're playing against, one of those cards that might or may not make the inclusion, so it could be something to look at as well.
Yeah, that's a potential too. It's a pretty nice commander remover for all the decks that have Korvald or anything else in the command zone, so it might stay in, it might get kicked out. It's a possibility.
Who knows?
Yeah. All right, so those are some pretty good suggestions there. Anything else?
No, I'm going to make you do the cuts on your own. That's the hard work. I don't get paid enough for that.
All right, so I guess that takes us to our hot seat for the week.
All right, if you were going to sit down and play a sealed game with some friends and you have the entire pool of Magic sets out, what set would you choose for a sealed experience?
Ooh, that's a good one.
I have to say original Innistrad block.
You know, I'm so upset because that's supposed to be like one of the best limited formats ever, and I was not playing. That was one of my brief times that I took a break from the game, so I have never played original Innistrad limited.
So I was playing during original Innistrad. I was not playing limited during original Innistrad. I did not start playing limited until Return to Ravnica block. So I missed out on all the fun of Innistrad limited. Triple Innistrad is just supposed to be like one of the best possible limited experiences you can have. I will say there is one sealed experience I will absolutely say never, ever, ever play. While it was a very interesting experiment, never do this. And that is Ice Age 5th edition, 4th edition.
That sounds miserable.
It was. You just draft all the removal, because removal is amazing in those dark ages of Magic and creatures are garbage. And I think I did over the course of 3 games something like 40 damage with the rack. Black Vice, excuse me. So yeah, don't do that. That's a horrible limited experience. Innistrad is up there for sure.
And I'll put 2 other contenders up there, just for saying it because of the uniqueness. Commander Legends, fun limited experience, and Battle Bond. Battle Bond was a lot of fun.
Battle Bond was a lot of fun.
Also, never done any of the like Conspiracy or Battle Bond sets as a limited experience.
Conspiracy 2 was very, very fun. Like, the conspiracies were such a neat design space for it, and I loved them. I kind of wish they could be used elsewhere, like in a cube or something. I would easily say Conspiracy 2 is a... And it also introduced the Monarch, which was our video this week. Yeah, Conspiracy 2, Battle Bond was also obscenely fun. One of the last Magic Fests we got to go to, Alex and I, we got to play in a Battle Bond draft, which was insanely fun.
We didn't win. However, we both built really solid decks.
Yes, yes. I am fine losing to a top deck X damage spell. Because we played the hell out of those games.
I think I would probably either go for Dominaria, because I loved Dominaria Limited. And the pool of cards and deck formats that are viable, I think, works pretty well for Sealed. And the other option I think I would go for is Modern Horizons, because I only got to draft that once, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was.
It was pretty much a disaster for Modern and Pauper and a lot of other formats, but you know what? It was really good for Limited.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Jake, I've got some good news for you. I had bought enough Dominaria product that I actually have saved 2 fairly large sealed pools that I was using to teach one of my sisters Magic with. Cool. And they are sleeved up like a cube, so it is a pretty easy thing to pull that back out. I think the only card I have pulled out of it, I pulled out one of the date stamp foil promos for a non-foil version of it, just because the Adelise the Cinderwind foil date stamped was actually kind of cool looking. So I replaced it with a non-foil one.
Well, that's great. As soon as the pandemic is over and I decide to drive 17 hours to your place, we can play some cubed.
Listen, we have absolutely Zaxby's and barbecue and McWob's.
All of that is very good.
And I think the last name I'll throw into the hat, just for fun, is Alara.
I was not playing during Shards block.
Neither was I,
interested in it. So my understanding of it was they didn't quite have the understanding of how to set up the shards properly for the draft environment, I wouldn't mind trying it. Like Khan's block, they knew what they were doing at that point. They knew you needed to have like enemy colors as the supported like cornerstones of your deck so you could properly draft a wedge. And I don't think they had that technology or understanding when they did shards block.
Khan's was a lot of fun. That was a fun
set. Khan's was super, super fun. I think I would say Khan's is on my short list of the triple Khan's.
Yeah, I was going to say it'd have to be triple Khan's because Fate Reforged and
Dragons of Tarkir.
Yeah, just not fun. Original Khan's, though, that's where it was at.
Agreed. Well, all right. So we've all got kind of crazy weeks ahead of us this week. Jake, you get to switch over to Night Shift for a whole week.
Hooray.
Alex, you get to finish setting up your new house.
I do. It's exciting. More than deck building.
So I guess we will call it an episode there. We'll be back again with a full audio episode in 2 weeks. Next week we'll do another mini episode that we'll release in audio and video format. But until then, I'm John.
I'm Alex.
And I'm Jake.
You can reach the crew from Gemstone Mine on Twitter at GemstoneMineMTG or send us an email at GemstoneMinePodcast@gmail.com. On YouTube, we're Gemstone Mine Podcast. Be sure to like, subscribe, and hit the notification bell.